Again, my name is Tisha Fowler, and I'm currently a doctoral student at the University of Texas School of Public Health in Houston, Texas. And this actually started out as a simple study that I did for a class. We have a pharmaceutical policy and politics course at the School of Public Health, and it really kind of motivated me and birthed the new research interest that I now have. So I'm going to talk to you about access to diabetes and asthma medications through pharmaceutical patient assistance programs. Simply, by the end of this presentation, I hope that you'll be able to apply the process of acquiring medications through patient assistance programs, that you'll be aware of the eligibility and required documentation for these programs, as well as be able to identify some potential barriers to utilization of these programs. So in general, we know that there's a problem with lack of insurance in the United States, and there's estimated to be nearly about 16% of the U.S. population does not have insurance. And among those that are uninsured, Hispanics or Latinos represent the largest proportion of those who are uninsured. And among those populations, there are certain subgroups of Hispanics and Latinos that actually have certain conditions that are highly prevalent in those populations, including asthma and type 2 diabetes. So for uninsured patients, often they cannot afford these medications, and we know that cost plays a huge role in that. So I just started becoming really obsessed with what do patients do when they don't have access to medications, particularly for conditions where you need some type of medical type of treatment. So one potential short-term option are these patient assistance programs, and these are basically voluntary programs that are sponsored by pharmaceutical programs that provide these medications for free or at reduced costs. I'm sure this number has expanded over time, but it was estimated at one point that there were over about 800 medications provided from 75 different manufacturers, and in general, most of these programs have their own individual application and eligibility requirements. In general, what we know about them is somewhat conflicting, and there's also a huge hole of information that we don't know. So you have some that say that these are really good programs, but then you have another view that says these are really labor-intensive, they're not even worth the effort. And then on the other side, you have a few studies that suggest that these have their cost savings for individual patients as well as organizations, but there is a lack of data that kind of links after these patients get access to these medications, are they adherent, and then are their outcomes actually better? So basically, the research questions that we were looking at is kind of a step process. So the first is, what brand, and we focus mainly on brand name. My edits didn't come through on the presentation, but we focus mainly on brand name medications specifically because I was more interested in seeing if they have equal access to brand name. I think there are some generics that are available, but I wanted to see if, you know, are pharmaceuticals simply giving them, are they also providing for them the newest and the, well, we can argue whether or not they're better, but I wanted to see if they really had access to the more newer therapies as well as those who would have insurance. So we focused on what medications, so we wanted to know what medications that are prescribed for type 2 diabetes and asthma are actually available through these programs. And then among those that are available, how many of those continue to be available after you apply a general set of characteristics of an uninsured Latino patient? And then among those that are accessible, we took it a step further, I think even after the abstract was submitted, to see if after you find those that are accessible, how many of those that are accessible actually meet the clinical guidelines for those type of therapies. So the first step was to identify a list of medications. So we pulled together two separate lists of medications that were, one were provided by the American Lung Association, another through the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, or NIDDK. And then we would search for them through a database, a comprehensive web-based database of patient assistance programs called Prescription Assist or RX Assist. And so then what we did was we tried to find those that were available, and then among those that were not available, we kind of did a quality check just to make sure that maybe they didn't include everything. So we went back to see who the manufacturer was of that medication, and then went directly to the manufacturer's website to see if there was some information that had not been captured in Rx Assist. And we only looked at the brand name medications. So we developed two hypothetical patients just based on some of the basic criteria that's often needed in order to apply for these patient assistance programs. So both of our patients don't have any insurance. They have varying levels of low income. One has limited English ability. The other is proficient in English. And then we have one that is also not a U.S. citizen, and then one that actually has recently diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and another that has had severe asthma as an adult. And the two different clinical guidelines that we used, one was through the American Diabetes Association, and the other was through the National Asthma Education and Prevention Program. And I'll say it later, but at the time that we conducted the analysis, they had the most recent guidelines for the asthma education program were in 2002, but they've recently been updated as of September of 2007. So from our results, we found that we searched a total of 90 medications. We found 42, and then we excluded 6 that only provided medications through generic programs. And again, it was just because the focus of this was brand name medications. 18 of those that were available were for diabetes, 21 were for asthma, and these medications were represented among 19 different manufacturers. And then for those that were not found, we searched again through trying to find out who the actual manufacturer was, and then we actually were not able to find any additional patient assistance program information through the manufacturers. So I'm kind of going to zip through this, and I might be zipping through the whole thing. I kind of talk fast sometimes. But the kind of general criteria that are used through these patient assistance program applications and eligibility are insurance status, which this kind of in the middle I have, like, that's just the most common. So these are the most common things that you'd see among these programs, is that the minimum requirement is that you just have no medication coverage. So you could have Medicaid, Medicare, or even private insurance, but you just, for whatever reason, you don't have any medication coverage. And for income eligibility, tended to be at or below 200% of the federal poverty line. For U.S. citizenship, is often required, and 12 of the 19 actually required it in ours. And then I just noted that 5 of them did not specify whether or not citizenship was required. And one of the issues with patient assistance programs is that because they're voluntary programs, they can exclude or include whenever they want to. And so sometimes when the criteria is not specified, you don't know what that means. So you could be totally excluded based on that or not, but it gives them more leeway to decide whether or not they're going to provide the medication. In terms of required attachments, often it was the IRS tax form and as well as the prescription. The required signatures are often a provider and a patient. So although a patient can kind of initiate this process on their own, they still would need the signature of a provider in order to submit their application. English only was for about 14 of the different, for the companies. We only had 4 that provided both English and Spanish applications. And in terms of delivery location, most of them would send them directly to the provider. I noted that GSK or GlaxoSmithKline, they would send it to a pharmacy, and then the patient would have to go pick it up at a pharmacy, and they'd have a $10 copay. For the delivery time, it tended to vary, ranging from 0 to 8 weeks, but the common one was about 0 to 2 weeks. And they often would receive a 90-day supply, and often they would have to apply again for these medications once a year. And then there were a couple companies where every time they needed a new medication, they would have to go through the process again. So I don't know if you can even read any of this, but kind of what we did was we looked across a diagram where we looked across for all the different eligibility requirements, and we just took all the patients' requirements and went across and went through to exclude them from whichever things that they did not qualify for hypothetically. And in the event that something was not specified, we just went ahead and said they would automatically continue to move forward and still submit, and they would be eligible for that requirement. So after applying the characteristics of Mary, one of our patients who had type 2 diabetes, she would be found to be, she'd still be eligible for about 9 different programs based off of her insurance status, income limitations, and then it would be narrowed down for the citizenship requirements, and then she would meet her required attachments. And then, but because she had limited English proficiency, there was only one company that was remained available to her in terms of having a Spanish application. And so that would leave her with 5 medication options through that one company. And then for the second patient, he basically remained, the biggest cut for him was the fact that he was not yet a U.S. citizen. And that narrowed him from 12 all the way to 4 different patient assistance programs. And in the end, he was eligible for 4 patient assistance programs, each with representation of 5 different medication options. So then when we applied the clinical guidelines, basically for both patients, they did not meet the full clinical guidelines for either profile of the patient. So in conclusion, for this study, we found that 40% of the medications that we searched for were actually provided by patient assistance programs. And for in terms of accessibility, many of the options were limited by the general characteristics. So the main barriers we found were language and citizenship, which also have been cited in the literature as additional barriers for these programs, as well as income. And in terms of the clinical guidelines, none of them actually met the clinical guidelines for first-line treatment for either diabetes or asthma. So, in general, the main limitations, we felt that there were off a very small sample of medications, but we tried to obtain listings from reputable organizations. We have hypothetical patients. But we tried to base their characteristics off of some of the more general characteristics of the uninsured to account for that. We're looking at guidelines versus actual practice. So while these guidelines were, you know, you could use them for this, you don't know what's really happening in practice. And so maybe the outcome would have been different in the actual practice setting. We focused only on diabetes and asthma. And we also focused only on brand name medications. But again, we wanted to see, do they have the same are these uninsured patients also available to receive the same medications that an insured patient would be able to have? There are generics available through 2 different programs that I saw commonly. One is called Prescription Outreach, and one is Zubex, and they both provide generic medication through patient assistance programs for patients. And thinking if we had have included the generics, I think it may have actually changed the number of medications that were available, but you can't necessarily say that it would have changed what they would have been accessible to or what would have applied to the clinical guidelines in the end. So in general, are these programs worth the effort? And I think that they are, and we do think that they are, but they are viable short-term options for patients. But still, we feel that there's still a need for universal health care coverage in the U.S., so we don't even have a need for these type of programs. And so just keep in mind, they're not a substitute for comprehensive health care, and that many patients actually need assistance in filling out these applications. And so I don't know what kind of institutions that you're in, but you can always start up a voluntary program to assist patients with getting on these applications. And Prescription Assist, they're not paying me to tout their horn, but I just find them very, they have a lot of good resources, and they actually have kind of a startup kit and a way for you to help maybe establish a program in your institution. And so we've actually submitted this for publication, and it's going to be available in the spring in the Journal of Public Health Pharmacy, which is a pretty new journal that we're really excited about. So thank you.